All right. Welcome to A Course in Miracles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So tonight we get to work on a personal admission. We get to work on, you know, a lot of times it's a surrender. The Course in Miracles is very much an undoing. The real work of A Course in Miracles is an undoing. You wouldn't add anything. You wouldn't learn anything. You would stop doing the ego. Courageously, somehow, you would stop doing the ego. That's A Course in Miracles. And then you discover that there's something there that was blocked by the ego. It's called love. The presence of love. It's called your true self, your Christ self. But there is also a surrender that kind of happens, an admission to what replaces the ego. You don't die. In your awakening, you don't die. You actually find out what life is. You find out what it means to be life instead of be alive. It's a difference between a verb and a noun, quite literally. But you discover something when you get still in your spiritual awakening. You discover a power that is, well, it's beyond the ego, but that's actually somewhat, it's like a priori ego, you know? The ego can't survive without this power. Certainly you don't exist without this power that you discover. That you discover when you stop doing the ego, even just for a moment. Course in Miracles has a few passages that are out and out threatening to the ego. And I think for the first time you read them, they're uncomfortable. Maybe even it sounds too religious because there's some power like God. And when the ego pictures a power of God, it pictures loss of everything you know. Now, that's half true. What's not true is that something of value to you would be taken from you. That's impossible. It's impossible. However, there's a very uncomfortable passage that if you try to make it too soon, you just have to reject it, because when we say the word God, it's like the boss, right? The man. What about you? What happens to you? If God takes over, do you have to now take orders? Are you not as free as you were before? You see, this is a very natural fear. It's called the fear of God. It's very, very natural. If you didn't have it, you haven't been doing your ego right. You were here to do your ego. That's what you've been doing. It's not a mistake. It's not a sin. But it does lead to a tragic experience. And you're just too far away from love. This is why you've come to A Course in Miracles. Or you've come to a spiritual awakening. Because you've just gotten too far away from home. So there are some passages in A Course in Miracles that they're as scary as they are beautiful. Just depends on where your mind is. If you're too far identifying with your body and the world, it seems like you're going to lose and you would be restricted in the presence of God or under the power of God. Whatever God is, it isn't what you know. So who cares what God is? You see the competition? You see the immediate problem? You are familiar and comfortable and rely on something that is in opposition to what we call God. You see why that's a problem? It has to be. In the hands of the ego, it's a good reason to run the other way. Save yourself. At least stick with what you know. But for all of us here, we've ran with the ego for a while. And I have not seen any ego promises that I would like fulfilled in my life that could bring me the happiness that I have touched with one instant of holiness, one instant of true peace that I have found inside. Amazing the transition that has happened in me just through my doing A Course in Miracles and my meditations. I have been reborn. I found something the world can't afford to give me. I've actually transcended a bit. All of you have. If you've had a holy instant where you felt out of time, even just for a fraction of an instant, you know what I'm talking about. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yes, yes, yes. So I want you to keep that in mind. Keep that holy instant in mind. Your best meditations, your happiest moments, your joyous perspectives that were larger than what your body and time and space can afford. When I say that scary word, God, right? It's not what the ego thinks it is. Luann.
I think this is a confession. Because when I'm thinking of your words, I'm thinking of the moment that I felt like there was nothing but love.
Mm-hmm.
And I was overwhelmed, and that was scary.
Yes. Good. Very good, because that's a challenge right there. Barbara?
My experience is that the Course is undoing me very carefully, and therefore that whole ego threatening thing, it does it so beautifully and so carefully that it doesn't become a threat. And then you start to have the experience that you are a thought of God, and an idea doesn't leave its source.
Atta girl.
And so it becomes very comforting, and that's why doing the workbook lessons, it's just that very careful undoing if you do them slowly and deeply. And that's what I'm experiencing right now. I'm in the review at about 170. And I just feel really very much comforted and not threatened at all. It's a miracle. It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. It is. Straight up.
It is.
Straight up. Jacqueline.
I mentioned it last night, but in my contemplation of will, my will, God's will, I shared that I was shown I am God's will is what I was shown. And today, I feel like I was further shown, because I was thinking, okay, God's will is love. God's will is light. God's will is peace. And that's where everything that I believe that I am is no longer, because I am abstract. I am love. I am peace. I am light. And I don't know if I'm putting this into words, but I just saw that that's what, because I did, I have had the fear come up. You know, I said, okay, what will I be? You know, how will I still exist? I mean, I had that fear come up, and I had a meditation with Holy Spirit about that. And I'm sure there's more fear, more levels of it, but it came up pretty strongly. And so I feel like this, I don't know if I'm putting it into words, but I just saw today that I won't be anything, you know, in form. I'll be, and that's one, I am one with the sonship. So when I say I am God's will, one with the sonship, I am God's will. So anyway, just, I thought that was, and it is, it doesn't feel so fearful somehow, even though I don't know, you know, how can I be an abstract love, light, peace, that those qualities, that's all that will, I will be.
Yes. Very good, Jacqueline. You run out of words pretty quickly, because Jacqueline, who's putting the words together, would run out of the ability to describe something that is absolute. She can only describe something perceivable. But if you say, rather than what's it like to, you know, experience peace, you might ask, what would it be like to be peace itself? To be love itself, not to experience it. That's time and space, and it's very fascinating, and there's nothing wrong with that. What would it like to actually expand into being love, or being joy, or being the light of the world? This is different from perception, exactly by that much. Beautiful, Jacqueline. I love it. Feel it. Go for it. It is what I call the a higher state of feeling. Remember, you come into Course in Miracles, you have feelings, but they're rotten, and you hope to have some good ones, because they are feelings that are educated, informed by the ego. Then you find some neutralities, you do your coursework, and your mind opens a little bit. You've had some great meditations, and you found some power and freedom in your mind. Some Christ visions have occurred. You saw things without your eyes. Now, you've discovered you've had feelings, but they were not feelings, the same ones that were informed by the ego, which are reactive feelings from your past, from your history. You see, these, you're starting to wake up into your mind and the power of your mind. And your Holy Spirit, okay, you had an unholy spirit that was driving feelings like worry, like loss, like anger, all the ego feelings. Or unholy, it takes to be a separate authority, a separate keyword authority informing your thoughts, therefore your feelings. And they feel like loss. They feel like lack. If, you know, threatening. But you do your spiritual work and you start to climb out of the darkness a bit, but it's coming in now to your own power. You discover a spaciousness. And like I say, you start to have a, you know, experiences that are inside. You start to discover that there is some kind of power in you. it's found, it's gone through a door of stillness. It's, you don't stand in the doorway. I know. So it's, some people have to for do these big meditations where you stand in the doorway for a long time. But there, are, you know, Sundari had a beautiful description of what I'm talking about, where you in your meditation, you know, you can work and work and work to let go, let go, let go, even with a mantra or something. And then she said she just stopped, but she was still. It was not a no longer was it what she called a meditative space, but she was still there in this spacious, non-descript space that you can't talk about because it didn't have the passage of details, even peace. This is a little doorway you step through, and then you discover you're still alive and somehow more spacious, more present. And all you're doing is you're simply not doing the separate, the mind, the body mind. And now the spirit mind has come to take a 51% position. It's very peaceful. It's very spacious. It's timeless. It only has to last an instant, folks. This is not something that you need to say, well, I got a glimpse and then it went away. It wasn't real. No, it's real. You'll start to learn that those instances out of time, those intervals out of time, are a different dimension. I mean, it's not a, you don't measure that, but boy, you can't miss it when it happens. And when it has, it will buy your allegiance now to a little more touching of the absolute, I'm calling it now in this conversation. Life is an absolute, not living. Living dies. That's not an absolute. Separate things live. You see? And then they die. But then that's that level. That's okay. What Jacqueline's talking about is she's gone past the victimhood level that dies. She kept saying feel, feel, right? She couldn't say think because she couldn't say understand. But now, when you got your Holy Spirit informing you, your feelings are now informed by wholeness. Dare I say love. And you see, that is an elevation and an awakening. And that's exactly what it's like to go through the door. Jason. I mean, let me get your mute. Hang on. Don't burn that ironing board.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Audible. You know what I've noticed lately? I've been listening to David Hoffmeister for years.
Sure. And
when people are asking questions, people just start crying with ecstasy. And I thought, wow, these people are really weak. I mean, why are they crying? I mean, but I've had that experience lately, so I'm kind of maybe too cynical to appreciate it. But Gary Renard's books, they said the two spirits, Artin and Persis, said being with God is like 100,000 million orgasms. And I'm just wondering if that's the resistance I'm feeling for the love of God, because it's just this crying of losing the skin, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a conflict that happens. It's beautifully described on page 243, so I guess we'll go there. Let's go there. Let's have Jesus tell us what it's like. Let's have Jesus tell us.
In the meantime, Jacqueline, thank you so much.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Jacqueline. I love it. You know, she says it, and then she says, I don't know if I'm saying it. You know, I'm kind of starting to feel it.
Yeah. What page?
Go to page 243 in the text.
243.
Yeah, this is an important paragraph. We're probably going to do this all year, every other meeting, if not every meeting. It seems to be coming up all the time. That's where we are. That's why. That's where we are. We're all now ready. We're all ready to challenge this and to embrace what it's like to cross over the center point of the bridge. Remember the bridge? We actually call it a rainbow now. Remember the bridge that we were talking about last year? And
yes, yes.
And now we're talking about going through the door, not standing on the threshold, but passing through the door. And that means you leave the room you were in before. Oh, my God. Yes. A little fear. Yeah? Okay. Jacqueline, let's have – I got your mute. Would you start for us reading on a paragraph – you know what? Let's do 2, 3, and 4. So start with paragraph 2.
On 242?
Yeah. And by the way, this title of this section is called aptly, The Fear of Redemption.
Yeah.
You are afraid of getting saved and by your source. Naturally, you are. If you're not, you've not been doing your ego right. So you probably won't.
What do you mean by that?
Is this in the text?
In the text.
Not do your ego right.
Yeah, so you haven't been in really in, you haven't really indulged in separation. You haven't been admitting to yourself how much you enjoy being in a body at any point. Don't worry, everybody's doing their ego right. But you got to face the fact. You have to face chapter 14. It says, "You who are." This is a quote. You who are miserable, comma, first must realize that you are miserable. You think happiness is right around the corner. If things would change for you here, you'd make it somehow, which is so ridiculous to the author of this book, you who are in a sack of wet meat and bones. And you're saying, oh, if I just had people show me more love, or if I had more money or more health, or if I could be with my family more or loved ones somehow. No, what? Oh, come on. You're like, you're really blind. So the book really knows what we are drunk on, this ego situation. And we do love it. And we do hope to have good things happen to us and that would be enough. But it's not enough. It can never be enough. Because everything here is limited. And you who are seeking to get enough have a limited ability to receive it. So you can never get enough. Only eternity will supply you. Only eternity. Only love with a capital L, which is eternal, can satisfy you, because that is what you actually are. Now, let's have Jesus put some words on this. Jacqueline, paragraph 2, page 242, that is, in the text, front of your book.
The fear of redemption. Under the ego's dark foundation is the memory of God, and it is of this that you are really afraid. For this memory would instantly restore you to your proper place, and it is this place that you have sought to leave. Your fear of attack is nothing compared to your fear of love. You would be willing to look even upon your savage wish to kill God's Son if you did not believe that it saves you from love. For this wish caused the separation, and you have protected it because you do not want the separation healed. You realize that by removing the dark cloud that obscures it, your love for your Father would impel you to answer his call and leap into heaven.
Leap into heaven.
You believe that attack is salvation because it would prevent you from this.
No kidding. Hey, folks, black and white, fine print. The diagnosis has been made by Dr. Jesus. Please continue.
You believe that attack is salvation because it would prevent you from this. For still deeper than the ego's foundation and much stronger than it will ever be is your intense and burning love of God and his for you. This is what you really want to hide.
For still deeper then the ego's foundation, a much stronger than it will ever be, is your intense and burning love of God and His for you. This is what you really want to hide in your game of separation. You ready, Luann? You're ready to go. Would you read for us?
May I ask something?
Oh, absolutely.
And that is, I'm still not in the right place. I thought you said 442 in the text.
Okay, let's try 242.
Okay. Sorry.
No problem. No problem. Yeah, you don't want to miss this next one, Barbara. Okay. All right, Luann. Page 242 in the text and paragraph 3. Oh, wait. Oh, Sundari's got something.
Is it possible not to be on recording?
Oh, well, we have some people who listen to these recordings. I can pause it. Yeah. If I pause it, I have to combine. Let's see. I think I can just pause it. Hang on, I'm going to stop the audio sharing. And okay, recording. Okay, we're back. Okay, we're back. So now, Luann, would you read for us paragraph 3?
And honestly, is it harder not for you to say I love than I hate? You associate love with weakness and hatred with strength, and your own real power seems to you as your real weakness. For you could not control your joyous response to the call of love if you heard it, and the whole world you thought you made would vanish. The Holy Spirit then seems to be attacking you from your fortress, for you would shut out God, and He does not will to be excluded.
And then, Luann, would you go back up and read paragraph 6, 7, you know, start with 6 and finish the previous paragraph?
Yes. Now we're starting with 6.
You realize that?
I'm on paragraph 6 is on 243.
Sentence 6, sorry. Paragraph 2.
Okay.
Rereading what Jacqueline already read.
Mm-hmm. You realize that by removing the dark cloud that obscures it, your love for your Father would impel you to answer His call and leap into heaven. You believe that attack is salvation because it would prevent you from this. It sounds awful. For still deeper than the ego's foundation and much stronger than it will ever be is your intense and burning love for God and His for you. This is what you really want to hide.
Deeper than the ego could ever go, this burning love you have for God and God for you. Stronger and deeper and more powerful and permanent. It's like a forgotten song, the melody of which, once you just begin to hear it, fills your heart.
It really makes me want to cry to the last sentence, number 9.
Yeah.
I don't want that to be true at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cecilia. All right. I got your mute. You got your mute. Okay. Would you read for us paragraph 4?
You have built your whole insane belief system because you think you would be helpless in God's presence and you would save yourself from His love because you think it would crush you into nothingness.
It's a pretty fair thought. If all you've known is your own little world and you're grateful for a good night's sleep and your favorite ice cream and that you can, you know, get through the day. And that is what you call happiness. Or even higher still, with your loved ones and your family and watching your kids grow up. Or maybe it's running your business or what have you. You hold that as precious and dear. You got pets that you absolutely love. You got children that you love. And you feel like you can't let that go. I mean, that's everything you know that's precious, right? Mm. Pretty fair. I think it's pretty fair statement that you've built your whole insane belief system because you think that you would be helpless in God's presence and you would save yourself from his love because you think that God's presence and God's love would crush you into nothingness. Because what does God know about your, living with your children or your pets or about your comforts of this body and time? It's a pretty fair question. I mean, really fair question. Yeah. Yeah. Please continue.
You're afraid it would sweep you away from yourself and make you little because you believe that magnitude lies in defiance and that attack is grandeur. Yeah. You think you have made a world God would destroy, and by loving him, which you do, you would throw this world away, which you would. Therefore, you have used the world to cover your love. And the deeper you go into the blackness of the ego's foundation, the closer you come to the love that is hidden there. And it is this that frightens you. Hmm. That's really complicated.
It goes wonderfully deep and it gives you a huge gift that would take you possibly years of seminary school and much meditation, maybe going into a cave to discover. And it's printed for you right on this page. Nobody talks about the light behind the darkness.
Does that kind of is this referring to, if you're so into the ego, eventually it's just going to lead into a lot of suffering sooner or later. And so is that, and then that suffering is going to wake you up. Yes. It's the, what is it, the dark night of the soul or, when you just hit bottom.
When you hit bottom.
And then how low can you go before you reach out to God once again?
Yes.
Is that what that's referring to?
That's what that's referring to.
Hmm.
You hit bottom and you wonder, what is it in me that even wants to live at all? And in that moment, you might touch eternity. In that moment of surrender, of saying there's nothing left, why would I even want to live? And yet I do. What was that? Huh. You might in that moment discover not living, because you've used up living, right? In fact, you don't even want to live. But you have discovered life. Do you see? Mm-hmm. In that simple, naked moment that has no more promises to offer, you might actually discover eternal life. Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the irony is that, we're going to die anyway.
Chica, are you sure? Even me? Cecilia, is that everybody is going to die? Did Jesus die? Buddha die?
Right. Yeah. I meant your body's
going to die. No, you're right. Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Everything you know here is going to die. Very good. Yeah, that's right. So the sooner we get the orientation, the sooner we awaken to this eternal spirit of life, the less you will be afraid of stopping living. It is part of your spiritual awakening, of course. Of course. It's beautiful. It's so freaking beautiful because it is the answer to your quest. The world has shown you nothing but loss eventually. And every wonderful, valuable thing that your body can appreciate dies. Either it dies or you die. But there's die always. Both sentences end with a death.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to be able to move your attention over to an eternal spirit of some sort. You don't have to define it. Just the word eternal is good enough. That's a possibility, and then you touch it for an instant. This world becomes meaningless. This world of limits, this world of end, becomes meaningless. Because something in you has touched eternity. It's literally, the experience is literally enlightening. You feel lighter. After a holy instant, you feel lighter. All things you look at have a different glow. I don't mean an aura and stuff that may happen, but it's much more important that you can see through the objects with your mind, not with your eyeballs, with your mind. Now, suddenly, the teeth in the world aren't so sharp. And you can resume your journey as an extension of God. And that's what we're getting to tonight.
Do you see Ross's hand?
Oh, no, Ross, bring it.
I just wanted to share a realization. I realized that I was waiting for some change in the Ross character to as a pointer to spiritual advancement. And I was like, wait a minute. That's not the way it works. You wake up from the Ross character and notice that anything that happens to the Ross character is irrelevant. Now there may, you know, and it's probably because I've seen so many spiritual teachers and seen, oh, look at their behavior. It looks this way. It looks that way. Well, that's how I should wait for that indicator that I'm, you know, advancing on my spiritual path. And I just realized, wait a minute, it has nothing to do with that. There may be indicators in the Ross character that spiritual advancement is happening, but there may not be. The Ross character could be mired in whatever script the Ross character is mired in, but the trick is to wake up from the Ross character and see the Ross character for what it is.
That's correct. Ross will never get it. Ross will never awaken.
Never even advance.
Yeah.
That's what I realized. It's not necessary for it even to advance one iota in terms of spiritual behavior or anything like that. Spiritual powers, anything like that.
Here's as close as Ross will get. And it's not bad. It's not bad. Here's as close as Ross will get. You in your through your miraculous spiritual studies, and you will approach the door, and you'll look at the door, and you'll say, "Wow, this is it! I have come to even have a Course in Miracles." I you look at this beautiful door, and then you start to identify with it, and you memorize it, and the door, and the door swings open, it goes into the light. That's as far as Ross can possibly go, is swing on the hinges, maybe past the darkness.
Well, another way spiritual teachers put it, Eckhart Tolle, which, we did 20 minutes of Eckhart Tolle last night, but Eckhart Tolle puts it, well, you're going to get signposts. I'm going to give you signposts to the edge of the cliff. But if you keep studying spiritual works, you're going to get more signposts to put in your, you know, shed. But the trick is not to focus on the signposts. Those are pointers. What you have to do, it's pointing you to the edge of the cliff. Eventually you have to jump. And I think that's what you're saying. You can sit on the hinges of the door, but I put,
and that's the point of this paragraph right here, is that, and then you read it again. You think you would be helpless in God's presence and you would save yourself from his love because you think it would crush you into nothingness? You're afraid it would sweep you away and make you little? You think all that? And then the next sentence, you think that you've made a world God would destroy, and by loving him, which you do, you would throw this world away, which you would.
Including the Ross character.
Yeah. You would throw away the limits of the Ross character. Say, right. I can no longer fit in the Ross character.
Right.
Because the Ross character was limit itself, and I have now become peace itself. And Ross character was, I don't know how I had any peace in that character.
Yeah. Well, it renders it irrelevant. In other words, whether it changes or not. You know, not because what you said is I can't fit into the Ross character. I mean, I think what I'm saying is going beyond that a little bit and saying that no, it doesn't matter one iota if the Ross character changes at all. It probably will, because the change in thinking of the mind will, you know, push that change through. But it's irrelevant whether it changes or not.
It's certainly not important at all. There's nothing in this world that has to happen for your freedom. Nothing in this world. This is an inside job.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah, we're saying the same thing, just in a different way.
No, I love it. I love it, Ross. Bring it. Yes, Barbara.
For me... talking about the Barbara Crumb character, and what I was talking about before about the undoing. To me, it's a shifting from living in my head where my brain and fear live. I literally make a shift into my heart, you know, thinking with the mind of my heart. And once I do that, the Barbara Crumb character just steps back and does less. I mean, this divorce, 2 years now, folks.
Oh boy.
You've gone through a big chunk with me, right?
Yep.
And I've been trying to make this thing happen. This has Barbara Crumb character has been trying to make these things happen, and it never happens as long as Barbara Crumb is driving it. But making the shift from my fear mind and my logical mind that thinks if I do these things, something will happen, and it never does, making that shift through doing the workbook lessons and being undone, mm-hmm. having Barbara Crumb slowly be undone, I've made the shift, and I do it consciously every morning, to shift from my fear brain mind into my heart mind. And then I just wait to see what I need to do. And the universe offers that up. Makes a lot more sense, and I don't have to do anything or worry about anything.
Yes, and it feels a lot different too. And I want to point out, though, that you have accomplished, you have empowered yourself to awaken a higher heart. Okay, before Course in Miracles, before your spiritual study, if we talked about your heart, you would hold it, and you might talk about some love or some hope. You know, you might talk about some loss, you know, how your heart was broken, and that would be your heart. And it's very heavy. It can be very heavy. Now you have moved into a touch of wholeness, a touch of a spiritual identity, rather than looking at differences, you've been empowered to look at sameness.
And I've been empowered by allowing myself to be undone.
Yes.
And, you know, it's literally like from one mind, the mind of fear, into the mind of my heart.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a different mind altogether.
It doesn't have
anything to do with Barbara Crumb.
You bet. You can even say it used to be the heart that was informed by your brain. Your brain says, if you love me, you'd say this and do this. And then I'll feel love. And that's your heart. Now there's a mind that has a bigger picture. And that is where your new heart is informed from.
Yes. And then there's nothing to do except to wait for, and things have happened that have just made a whole lot more sense. And plus, I don't even care anymore. I don't even care anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, nothing has changed. I'm still in the middle of this divorce.
You bet. You'll still work the details, but you now has less teeth.
But I'm doing it from a different center.
Yes. Good. Good. So I want to give you good news.
Good.
There is a whole nother level that you are about to discover.
Oh, good.
You're in the same direction that you're going on this vector of freedom. You were in wrong heart. It was needy. Yes. It was expensive.
Yes.
It needed to be fed and pampered and satisfied. Otherwise, the world was unfair and you'd have to fight. Okay, that was wrong heart. It was reasonable, and there's books and movies written on it, lots of songs. You move to right heart. Right heart is actually rolling with the punches.
Right. Right.
It's actually feeling some sense of ease around the problem.
Exactly. Exactly.
See, wrong heart can never do that. Wrong heart would just fight more and louder.
So you almost have to bow to the divorce for allowing it to be the context in which the shift has happened. And I'm not sure it would have happened.
Oh, yeah. No, really. Lesson 193. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all things are lessons for you to learn forgiveness.
It feels like a trajectory. It feels like an unfolding.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like I'm really excited about the next lesson.
That a girl.
Because it feels very rich.
And it's permanent, Barbara.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you what you've accomplished. You can try to deny it, but it's permanent. You have awakened from wrong heart. It just doesn't serve.
Feels like a gift.
And I'm telling you, there's a whole nother level.
I just met with my spiritual director in New Camaldoli, the Catholic monk, and I read him from The Course in Miracles, and he was going, amen. Amen.
All right.
Amen. And you know what he said? And there's so much more.
Yeah.
Just exactly what you said.
Good, good.
So anyway, thank you.
Good, good, good. Thank you for that. Thank you. Beautiful, beautiful. Good sharing. Luann, did you finish? I think I interrupted you. You did finish.
I wasn't reading anymore.
Oh, yeah, you did finish. Yeah, because that last sentence we read, therefore, you have used the world to cover your love. Be busy doing that. And the deeper you go into the blackness of the ego's foundation, the closer you come to the love that's hidden there, with a capital L, folks. And we discussed that it is like, you know, you're approaching the bottom and you discover that there's life. The living, you decide you're ready to give up on living entirely, you discover the life, you bet. You don't need to get into a hell to do that. So the Course in Miracles is designed to help you have that part of your ego die before you get into such darkness and misery and destroy all things in your life. Could certainly do that. Let's take a quick peek. Are we having time here? Yeah. Quick peek at page 632. We don't go here very often, but it's time tonight because of what we're trying to learn in that paragraph. Tonight's reading. Look
Can
at
you repeat the page, please?
632 in the text, and Dawn's going to read for us paragraph 10 in the text, page 632, chapter 30. Let's talk more about this big hug from God that your ego thinks will crush you, but your spirit knows you would run to. Like the forgotten song you love so much. Don, go for it.
Beyond all idols is the thought God holds of you, completely unaffected by the turmoil and the terror of the world. The dreams of birth and death that here are dreams, the myriad of forms that fear can take, quite undisturbed. The thought God holds of you remains exactly as it always was. Surrounded by a stillness so complete, no sound of battle comes remotely near. It rests in certainty and perfect peace. Here is your one reality kept safe, completely unaware of all the world that worships idols and that knows not God. In perfect sureness of its changelessness and of its rest in its eternal home, the thought God holds of you, has never left the mind.
You hear that echo too, huh, Don?
Yeah. I thought it was God. No, just kidding. The thought God holds of you has never left the mind of its creator, whom it knows, as its creator knows that it is there forever.
It's a beautiful love letter.
That's a beautiful love letter.
The thought of God holds for you. Barbara, I got your mute. Would you read for us the next paragraph?
Where could the thought God holds of you exist but where you are?
Whoa, read that again.
Where could the thought God holds of you exist but where you are?
This is starting to define, folks, what you are.
Is your reality a thing apart from you and in a world which your reality knows nothing of? Outside you, there is no eternal sky, no changeless star, and no reality. The mind of heaven's sun in heaven is, for there the mind of Father and of Son joined in creation, which can have no end. Did I read that right?
You did, and it's a love letter. It's an absolutely romantic love letter.
I want to read that again because I
think you
didn't
should.
Hear it.
And everybody recognize that this is a love letter defining what you actually are.
The mind of heaven's Son in heaven is, for there the mind of Father and of Son joined in creation, which can have no end. You have not two realities.
And by the way, we don't have time to spend a lot of time in this particular paragraph, so I just want to point out to you some of the structure of that particular sentence. The mind of heaven's Son in heaven is. For there, the mind of Father and of Son joined. How did they join? What did they join? What happened? As the Father and the Son mind joined, it joined in creation.
Which can have no end.
Which can have no end, because that's what creation is. And therefore, when you think that you would lose something of value if you threw away this world in the presence of God's love, which you would, you would not lose something of value. You would return to value. You would return to creation and step out of this very, very limited dream of being a sack of wet meat and bones. Okay, please continue.
Okay, you have not two realities, but one.
Whoa, isn't that great news?
It is.
Only one of these realities is true. It is not the fantasy of being a body. Please continue.
nor can you be aware of more than one. And
there's the fine print, folks. Another short sentence in A Course in Miracles that explains why things can seem so difficult. They're only difficult because you're focusing on difficulty. On darkness, you get darkness. On light, you get light. Barbara, please continue.
Okay. An idol or the thought God holds of you is your reality. Forget not, then, that idols must keep hidden what you are, not from the mind of God, but from your own. The star shines still, the sky has never changed, but you, the Holy Son of God himself, are unaware of your reality.
Diagnosis complete. Sundari.
Well, the most shocking sentence to me at the moment there is number three. Outside you, there is no eternal sky, no changeless star, no reality. And to me, that's a confirmation that God and I have the same birthday.
Yes, indeed.
But that's a shock, you know, that as God was, I was, because otherwise that sentence wouldn't be true.
And it's reinforced in the next sentence when it says, the mind of heaven's son in heaven is, for there in heaven, the mind of father and of son joined in creation. There's your eternal sky. There's your eternal joy. There's your eternal happiness. There's your ability to share at all in truth is only in the joining of the power of God with you as creation, folks. Not as a dream, not as a substitute, not as an idol, but as creation itself. I mean, that's your true nature. This is a love letter of your true nature. Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. You know what we're studying in this section? Just to keep your eyes on the ball here, because we'll be studying this for the next couple of weeks. Now we're in a great spot to rehearse what it is we are studying. Turn now to page 463 in the text, 463. And let's ask the last unanswered question, once again, now that we've read a few beautiful love letters about the nature of God's thoughts of you and the nature of your very being as being a concert of joining of mind in creation. Now that we've spent some time with that, look on page 463. Look at that italicized sentence number 14. And Deborah, I got your mute. Would you please read for us sentence number 14?
And do I want to see what I denied because it is the truth?
Yeah.
And do I want to see what I denied because it's the truth?
Teach us. Teach us. What's being asked there? If you care to, you can say pass anytime.
Well, I could say it in terms of an experience I had that brought me to it. I live alone, and this appeared in my book, this bookmark. It appeared in my book. It's some kind of little black sticky thing. And so I read this page probably, I don't know, 20 or 30 times. When you are sad, when you are anxious, when you feel guilty, all these, this need not be. And I had a really difficult something with a friend of like 30 years, and I really, really, really didn't know how to go forward with it. And I was just thinking of all these strategies and the ego world, and then finally I just said the long and short of it is I love you very much, and it just totally released everything that was a struggle, and it felt really beautiful, and it felt so otherworldly. Mm. And I hardly know how to proceed because I'm challenged to stay in that blissful place. But so, and do I want to see what I denied because it is the truth? Yes, I had a moment there.
You had a moment there. A bunch of denial was, and even is. I have it, if nothing else. There's denial of that bliss, of that freedom, of that actual willingness to just love.
Yeah.
There's...
That was perfect, guys. The long and the short of it is, I love you.
Yeah. It's a great forgiveness. Forgiveness is an undoing of all the hatred there. A release of even trying to be right. You'd rather be happy and be in love. This is not something you do to feel better. It's not something you do to stop hurting. That's the wrong motivation. It's limited. But because it's the truth, and you don't know how you would have got there other than just absolutely having a shift in perception and saying, I just love you. That is a miracle, and it's forgiveness, and it's just going to the truth, not trying to analyze, argue, win, justify. All that's out the door. Yeah, this is simplicity of salvation, is that you can make these choices. Very good. Very good. But it's because it's the truth, not because it's some way to feel better. You see the subtlety there, but it makes a big difference. Your motivation is the truth. Now you're touching on something that is renewable, that is versatile, that is can be generalized to any other situation. Because you're going for the truth of the matter is that you are connected in the most important ways, already and forever, to what it is you thought you were fighting. Everybody has the same goal. Even if you end up in a divorce, you can join with the person that you were divorcing. You have to finish that job, huh, Barbara? You got to finish this job. But part of you can step back and see that behind all of the angry words and all the problems really is two people who are trying to be happy once again. Therefore, it's really about happiness, isn't it? And then when you start to appreciate their happiness, now you're moving toward love because you're joining with them. And it's important now because you want happiness everywhere and for you too. So that's compassion.
My divorce ended 30 years ago, maybe. Let me see, when I was 50, so yeah, 30 years ago. And yeah, I think of that state of the way I was. Well, I still love
him. We're losing you there. We're losing the audio on you, Noelle.
My truth is about my ex-husband of 30 years is that I don't want to be with him, but I still love him.
Yeah.
No matter what, I love him.
Good.
Yeah.
Your ex-husband is always right, but his ego is always wrong. You can love your ex-husband because he is always right, always, every time, always. But his ego is always wrong, and so is yours.
Exactly.
Anthony DeMello, one of my favorite light guys, east-west kind of guy, he said, "You're an ass. and I'm an ass also. At this level, it's the same. But when you meet on the spiritual level, that's the same too, and it's always beautiful. Okay. Now, let's do tonight's reading, which is on page 462, the facing page. And Deborah, would you read for us paragraph 3? Oops. Yep. Good.
Frantic and loud and strong the dark ones seem to be, yet they know not their enemy, except they hate him.
Now this they do know. Darkness. Remember, we're always talking about two things, dark and light. You know that such a guru is a, you know, gu is dark and ru is light. Did you know that? A guru. I mean, that's the guru's job, is to take you from darkness to light. I mean, it's that simple, right? So the dark ones know fear, anger. Yeah. Please continue.
Yet they know not their enemy, except they hate him. In hatred they have come together, but have not joined each other. For had they done so, hatred would be impossible.
Wow, how's that, Barbara, getting through your divorce? And how's that, Luann, where you discover, you know, even though we had the divorce so many years ago, I can't deny the fact that I still love this being. That's a really nice thing to allow yourself to know. Hatred is actually impossible. Not going to live together. Going to have to do some things with lawyers and stuff to get the world straightened out.
You're both sons of God.
Both sons of God.
I'm both the child of God.
Yes. Please continue.
The army of the powerless must be disbanded in the presence of strength. Those who are strong are never treacherous, because they have no need to dream of power and to act out their dream. How would any army act in dreams? Any way at all? It could be seen attacking anyone with anything. Dreams have no reason in them. A flower turns into a poisoned spear. A child becomes a giant, and a mouse roars like a lion. And love is turned to hate as easily. This is no army, but a madhouse. What seems to be a planned attack is bedlam.
And that's what dreams are like. Dreams turn into nightmares as easily. He's just calling it like it is. You know, there's a couple of paragraphs in the workbook we should read at this point. Turn to page 34 in the workbook. We'll just read the first two paragraphs of lesson 23. Go to page 34 in the workbook, right in the middle of your book. Crack it in half. Turn a few pages and go to page 34 in the workbook. The top of the page says lesson 23. The bottom says 34. This is another extremely practical lesson, a gift to you from your awakened mind. Albert, I got your mute. No, you have to get your mute. Would you get your mute and read for us paragraph 1 in the title as well?
Okay. Lesson 23. I can't escape from the world I see by giving up attack thoughts. The idea for today contains the only way out of fear that will ever succeed. Nothing else will work. Everything else is meaningless. But this way cannot fail. Every thought you have makes up some segment of the world you see. It is your thoughts then, that we must work if your perception of the world is to be changed.
And your perception of the world must be changed. Yeah. David, go ahead. Would you read for us paragraph 2?
David.
Duke. Am I muted still?
You sound good.
Okay. In the case of the world you see is attack thoughts, you must learn that it is these thoughts which you do not want. There is no point lamenting the world. There is no point in trying to change the world. It is incapable of change because it is merely an effect.
Right, Jacqueline?
But there is indeed a point in changing your thoughts about the world. Here you are changing the cause. The effect will change automatically.
Yes. This is the power of your mind. This is the lesson of salvation in A Course in Miracles. The change is an inside job. It's something you will do. You will discover that it's actually an undoing. No invention required, nothing creative even. Just a willingness to accept the embrace of the idea of wholeness or eternity in compared to the littleness that you've been working on. Yes, Indari?
Well, this feels to me a place I've been stuck for a while.
Okay.
And I really clearly see my attack thoughts. And when I see them, I'm consciously choosing to think differently, set a different goal, many things, and yet seem to be in this loop of intensity in looking at that, and also in creating intense situations as I become more and more keenly aware of the extent of my attack thoughts, and feel somewhat stuck in that, just in these situations arising. And I can even trace the thoughts back to my creation of them, and yet still seem, and I'm a great creator.
Yep. Too bad. You're such a good creator. You make a great justification for attack.
It's a funny thing. It's like, and choosing peace more and more strongly.
Yeah, this is the key. This is the key, Sundari.
Just a deeper and deeper alignment with that choosing, with the willingness, with the asking, and with knowing I don't know how to get there.
Yeah. This is your path. It's part of your path. You have also a simultaneous path you are working that is different than this one. We've talked about it before, but this one, the attack, you see, the attack thoughts, you believe that the attack will work. You believe that it's justified and it will work. It isn't even the communication that you are believing. That actually would be a better path to take. It's the overwhelming feeling that the attack now is justified. That only because it's fair and it will work. See? Now, remember, the communication need not be abandoned. But somehow, some way, and this is your contribution.
What communication? I'm this confusing.
Anytime you have an attack, it's because something needs to be communicated. Something is misunderstood.
Okay.
In the hands of the ego, it turns into an attack.
Can I give an example?
Sure.
Let Sundari finish.
There's a way I see the futility of communicating, and so there's a shutdown, the fifth chakra, of feeling there's no way to communicate without attacking.
There you go. Well said. Well said, my dear.
And so I know not to do that, but I get lost at valuing my feelings. It's interesting. So much of David Hoffmeister's work, we were talking about this, Don, is the expression session of allowing one to express one's feelings. And it's like, that's what's locked.
Yeah.
That's the locked place.
And that's the other path you're working on. You've named them both now.
Oh, that was the other path you were referring to?
Yes. Self-worth.
Well, but self-worth specifically with giving, feelings are always valid.
Okay, now, here.
In the theory, but not necessarily the judgments around them.
The source of the feelings is not always valid. And the task given to the feelings is not always valid. It's often misled by the ego and the false sense of love. Now, what is the saving thought from A Course in Miracles? What is the saving thought from A Course in Miracles in this? And I happen to have it queued up for you in audio, and a great way to finish the meeting. It's the peace now, rather than from attack, but the peace that the Course calls the peace of God. So hang on a second. Let me get ready for a little meditation. It's be about 6 minutes or so. And here it comes. Listen to this beautiful, another love letter for you.
Lesson 200. There is no peace except the peace of God. Seek you no further. You will not find peace except the peace of God. Accept this fact and save yourself the agony of yet more bitter disappointments, bleak despair, and sense of icy hopelessness and doubt. Seek you no further. There is nothing else for you to find except the peace of God, unless you seek for misery and pain. This is the final point to which each one must come at last, to lay aside all hope of finding happiness where there is none, of being saved by what can only hurt, of making peace of chaos, joy of pain, and heaven out of hell. Attempt no more to win through losing, nor to die to live. You cannot but be asking for defeat, yet you can ask as easily for love, for happiness, and for eternal life, in peace that has no ending. Ask for this, and you can only win. To ask for what you have already must succeed. To ask that what is false be true can only fail. Forgive yourself for vain imaginings, and seek no longer what you cannot find, for what could be more foolish than to seek and seek and seek again for hell, when you have but to look with open eyes to find that heaven lies before you through a door that opens easily to welcome you. Come home. You have not found your happiness in foreign places and in alien forms that have no meaning to you, though you sought to make them meaningful. This world is not where you belong. You are a stranger here. But it is given you to find the means whereby the world no longer seems to be a prison house or jail for anyone. Freedom is given you where you beheld but chains and iron doors. But you must change your mind about the purpose of the world if you would find escape. You will be bound till all the world is seen by you as blessed, and everyone made free of your mistakes, and honored as he is. You made him not, no more yourself, and as you free the one, the other is accepted as he is. What does forgiveness do? In truth, it has no function, and does nothing. For forgiveness is unknown in heaven. It is only hell where it is needed, and where it must serve a mighty function. Is not the escape of God's beloved Son from evil dreams that he imagines, yet believes are true, a worthy purpose? Who could hope for more, while there appears to be a choice to make between success and failure, love and fear? There is no peace except the peace of God, because he has one Son, who cannot make a world in opposition to God's will, and to his own, which is the same as his. What could he hope for to find in such a world? It cannot have reality, because it never was created. Is it here that he would seek for peace, or must he see that, as he looks on it, the world can but deceive? Yet can he learn to look on it another way and find the peace of God? Peace is the bridge that everyone will cross to leave this world behind. But peace begins within the world perceived as different, and leading from this fresh perception to the gate of heaven and the way beyond. Peace is the answer to conflicting goals, to senseless journeys, frantic, vain pursuits, and meaningless endeavors. Now the way is easy, sloping gently toward the bridge where freedom lies, within the peace of God. Let us not lose our way again today. We go to heaven, and the path is straight. Only if we attempt to wander can there be delay and needless wasted time on thorny byways. God alone is sure, and he will guide our footsteps. He will not desert his Son in need, nor let him stray forever from his home. The Father calls, the Son will hear. And that is all there is to what appears to be a world apart from God, where bodies have reality. Now is there silence. Seek no further. You have come to where the road is carpeted with leaves of false desires, fallen from the trees of hopelessness you sought before. Now are they underfoot, and you look up and on toward heaven with the body's eyes but serving for an instant longer now. Peace is already recognized at last, and you can feel its soft embrace around your heart and mind with comfort and with love. Today, we seek no idols. Peace cannot be found in them. The peace of God is ours, and only this will we accept and want. Peace be to us today, for we have found a simple, happy way to leave the world of ambiguity and to replace our shifting goals and solitary dreams with single purpose and companionship. For peace is union, if it be of God. We seek no further. We are close to home, and draw still nearer every time we say, there is no peace except the peace of God. And I am glad and thankful it is so.
Okay, everybody, that is the answer to following any attack thoughts or trying to win through attacking. You're trying to win through losing by definition. So thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me. We're going to do it again next week. Thank you so much for all of the candid comments and the awakening experiences that you guys are sharing. It's really priceless. Thank you. Thank you.
That was a great way to end the meeting. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Bye.